This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh. Flesh and Beck Law. Kevin's number, I always tell you, put it in your phone, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic.
Weather to change?
Well, it is definitely interesting this week as to what has happened with the weather, but you know.
Absolutely. You never know what you're going to get here.
Exactly. It is Colorado, so, you know, all four seasons someday is in the same 24-hour
same
period.
24 hours, absolutely. Well, again, Kevin is with us every other week, and we have a legal hour. We'll take your legal questions, and we can always help you out through our website as well, haystackhelp.com. We have a box there right there on our homepage. You can send us an email if you ever have a question for Kevin. Don't want to be on air. You can send us a question through there, and I promise you we'll get right back to you. Kevin, several areas want to talk about, and we're, needless to say, moving into that time of winter driving. And I was doing a little bit of research and saw some things on the news about this whole traction law thing.
You're a very good researcher, by the way.
I try. So I know what to ask you because
right.
I know you got the answer. But first of all, man, it doesn't take long to be on the roads and figure out that person should not be driving today.
Exactly correctly, yes. And in fact, I was watching somebody this morning that was going westbound on Hamden, was going sideways down the roadway as I came over to the radio station.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, not good.
Yeah. So, what are your responsibilities as the driver, just realizing your vehicle's in good shape and as far as tires and going in the mountains?
Yeah, you know, so it's with the weather changes that we've had over the last 10 days or so, people have to realize that winter is coming and that during winter driving conditions, you have to be worried about your tires because they're going to sound like a tire salesman now. But the important thing with good tires is you got to have lots of tread. They have to be ready for snow and ice. And that those tires, if you don't have an all-wheel drive vehicle, the state now has put some regulations, especially the I-70 corridor. And that probably is a good example of just reasonable tire usage in general. I mean, if you start looking at your tires and say, ooh, those tires need a little work, that's fine during the summer probably, although if you, you know, during the summer if you get hydroplaning and rainstorms and that sort of thing, you have to wonder about how your tires are doing then too. But certainly during the winter, it changes how your vehicle performs, and you certainly don't want to hit somebody because of your tires.
Sure.
And in the event that you do, you know, you're going to be causing damage to someone when you probably didn't need to. Mm-hmm. And that would go to sort of a negligence claim just from the get-go. Even if conditions are bad, you still want to be reasonable in how your vehicle is maintained. And then obviously all of the other things you should have with you in this climate relating to, you know, probably a small shovel, something in your car relating to, you know, ice melt or
right. Sand
and chains if you need them, depending upon where you're going and what sort of conditions you're expecting to drive in, those sorts of things.
And tires are, if you look at anything on an automobile, probably the easiest things to never look at. Because you walk out, there's four of them on there, you're good.
That's true. And at the same time, they are so important.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and maybe it's just my years of driving experience. When you're a new driver, you're like, oh, I don't want to spend all that money on tires. It seems like such a waste. But then you get into situations with weather and you realize how much those tires make a difference. And there's a wide range of different tires out there that for inclement weather really do change the way that your vehicle drives and what you can accomplish. You know, a few years ago, I was driving a Mini, which you'd think, geez, that's a little bitty car, but it had all-wheel drive and it was super heavy. That thing would go it would go through anything,
right. Except
if you high-centered it on 15 inches of snow. Otherwise, the thing was bomb-proof. And that's what you have to figure out with your vehicle and what you're comfortable driving. Front-wheel drive cars, you have to drive differently than all-wheel drive cars. Rear-wheel drive cars, same thing. You know, pickup trucks that don't have a whole lot of weight in the back, you have to consider, do I put bags of sand in the back of my pickup during the winter so that I have better traction? Those are all things you have to consider in these sorts of situations, because when you cause an accident because of your lack of either experience or the lack of having good equipment on your vehicle, you're going to be responsible for what happens in those accidents.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of responsibility, too. I mean, you know, when I think of our church and different churches, a lot of people going up to go ski and everything.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of responsibilities if you've ever got a group going in vans or buses, different things.
Yep. Especially commercial vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and when you get a big group of people like that, and we've done that, you know, had groups go up and you take the church van and it's great around town, but you get into 10 inches of snow up there and maybe the tires aren't what they should be. Organizations need to be aware of that. And this is the perfect time. We've just been through a bad patch of weather. And now, you know, you have time before it's just sort of settled in and it is what it is. And I think it's a great time to do an inventory relating to either your personal vehicle or if you're involved with organizations that have vehicles, to make sure that they're taking care of the maintenance in a reasonable fashion.
So you as a, when you're helping people with their personal injury case, have you had cases where you've gone back and looked at conditions of vehicles that have hit
Yeah.
the client and things
Yeah,
like
so
that?
Sometimes... when we have a weather event and there's accidents, sometimes insurance companies will say, well, the cause of that accident was really what's called an act of God. I mean, it's the weather that's caused the problem, not necessarily the condition of the vehicle that hit you. And so we have to go back and look at the vehicle and really make some assessments relating to, well, were they reasonable in the way that they had their vehicle set up? Was the lack of stopping at a stop sign something they could have controlled by stopping sooner? Was it because of the tires? Was it something else that was going on with the vehicle? Because sometimes that is a valid defense. Or sometimes, you know, a person has a medical emergency in the vehicle and causes damage to something. And then the question is, were they negligent or was it just a really bad situation and it wasn't necessarily anyone's fault?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those cases, we've had those cases where we really have to go back and take a look at that. So it always comes back to the discussion about, you know, what do you do when you're in an accident, especially in conditions that are, maybe there is a weather warning of some sort and they say, you know, make a report later, don't call the police right. now because we're on accident alert. But you need to still document those things because you don't want to get into a situation later where you're significantly injured and then the other party's like, well, it really wasn't our fault because of this or that. Sometimes it is. Most of the time it's not, though.
Right. Because, I mean, we were knew of a case several years ago, a church group was coming back from Oklahoma, and man, got the lineman, you know, and boy, it hit some ice. And one guy was actually a deputy sheriff that was driving the van, and he got a careless drive. Now, he wasn't going 15, 20 miles an hour. But then, you know, someone ended up getting killed. They rode the van, and someone would get killed. So you can get a careless driving, and doesn't mean you're going 90.
No. It means that the conditions warrant you going 5 miles an hour and you're going 20. And that's a really good, I mean, there's a situation where you just don't want that to happen at all.
Right.
But if you do, then everybody scrutinizes what was going on and what the conditions were like. And obviously when you have significant serious bodily injury, even wrongful death, that's where the police really do a good investigation and you get really good pictures and other evidence relating to what took place that you can piece it back together later. But you just don't want to be in that situation to begin with.
Right.
And you just, the whole idea is that you understand sort of the situation that you're in. And for example, if someone is in that situation and recognizes early on, there's no accident, but you recognize that you just need to work on your skill set relating to winter driving. You know, there's driving classes out there. There's stuff that's, Bandimere has some different things that people come in and do regular driving classes, and they set it up. It's really interesting. They put this sort of slick material on the wheels so that in the dead of summer, you can drive on a situation where it feels like you're on ice. They have those winter driving courses up in Georgetown, I know, too. So it's folks that, you know, we've got a lot of folks that are moving into the metro area. The idea is that if you're not comfortable in driving in snow and ice, that you get the needed coursework so that you feel comfortable. Because if you feel comfortable, your reactions will probably be better and you won't get into those accidents. So we don't have to worry about it. You don't have to come and see me relating to a personal injury case.
Unless you got a four-wheel drive, of course, then you can go any speed you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
You see those guys. Oh. I mean, dude, I mean, I drive a truck, but I mean.
I do, too.
Man, sometimes there's just people, and wow,
yeah.
Scream by you.
Yeah, it's the stopping that's difficult for them because all four wheels still slide, even in four-wheel drive. Right. And most folks don't, you know, most folks don't practice working on slowing down with their, most of us have automatic transmissions anymore, and so most folks don't understand that you can still, you know, downshift and work with your vehicle to make sure that it doesn't get out of sync speed-wise relating to just using your, especially going downhill, using your automatic transmission to deal with that sort of thing, especially days like today, because once you lose control, once those tires start sliding, then you lose all control, and you want to keep control so that you can make some turns in a reasonable fashion in case something happens.
Right. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. Again, Kevin's number 303-806-8886, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. Now, depending on the weather, sometimes we hear this thing on the news, we're under accident alert. So how does that differ? We have gone through millions of times what to do, but still, sometimes when you go through an accident, man, you just quit thinking.
Right.
But accident alert, where they're telling you not to call the cops unless...
unless serious bodily injury, unless there's really some significant reason for the police to be involved. It's just very difficult to get the police there to begin with, so they want you to hold off on making those reports. You still can make a counter report. You can still get in contact with the police later and document what happened. The trouble with those sorts of scenarios when the police don't show up is then it's all on you, where you're the victim of a car accident where someone has caused injury to you. You want to make sure that you can harvest whatever evidence you have at the scene. So you want to take a bunch of photographs. Mm-hmm. You want to get information relating to insurance. You want to get the identification of the owner of the vehicle and the driver of the vehicle, take their pictures, make sure that you can do everything that you can, as long as you're able to physically, to gather that information so that we can piece it back together later, or that you can give it to a police officer so that they can write a report. And, you know, when we're on accident alert and you don't have the police come out, there's no one that gets charged with any sort of traffic violation. And sometimes that's a really big deal for the insurance company. They really sometimes make decisions relating to how they're going to pay a claim based upon the evaluation of a police officer and what they found at the scene. And so if you lose that, you may be losing some value in your case. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take that into consideration. And what I would say is that in the event that you really are feeling like you're hurt, you can certainly call an ambulance and you can certainly call the police. If you're not, and it does seem like it's a minimal sort of thing, then you just want to generate as much of that evidence as possible at the scene so that we can use it later.
Right. And then try to get that in the next day or so. I mean, you don't want to wait.
Correct. You don't.
Weeks.
Correct. You definitely don't. You want to do it that day or the next day. And the reason that you want to do that is so that the insurance company can't make the argument later that you had some superseding, that something happened after the accident that caused the injury rather than the accident itself. Because if you don't do that, it opens up the door for them to make up excuses is the best way that I can describe it.
Sure. Once again, it's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. 303-806-8886 is Kevin's number. Hope you never need it, but when you do, you've got it right there at your fingertips. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some winter driving. Also, some different deals, Kevin. We got some questions in about different warrants. There was something on the news the other day where they were doing this felony warrant stop.
Yes.
So we'll talk about some different types of warrants when we come back.
All right.
You're listening to Haystack Help Radio, the Legal Hour. We'll be right back.
The tingling and numbness in your feet started a long time ago, and it's only gotten worse. It's finally getting to the point where you can't sleep at night. It's starting to affect your balance, and although your doctor prescribed medication, you worry about the side effects. Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor with Front Range Medical Center, offers an advanced treatment for peripheral neuropathy that can greatly reduce your nerve pain. Regain feeling and mobility without taking prescription medications. At Front Range Medical Center, Dr. Anderson and his team treat the source of the nerve pain using one of the most advanced forms of electronic medicine to help their patients experience long-term success. You know the problem won't go away on its own. Call Dr. Dean Anderson today and mention Haystack Help Radio to receive a $27 consultation, including a neuropathy-specific exam and a review of your health history. Find out whether or not you could be a candidate for this advanced treatment. Call 720-851-9694, 720-851-9694. You have nothing to lose but pain.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Householder Group. 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to the Legal Hour. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watney. We're glad you are with us. Hope everyone will drive safe and be careful out there today. As temperatures drop, it is probably going to get a little bit dicier in the drive and with the rush hour. So hope everyone will be careful. Kevin Flesh is with us. It is the Legal Hour. We were talking a little bit about winter driving and accidents and all, just in general. And so, Kevin, how long do you have to report? I mean, we're saying, like, we're on accident alert. Is there a – how long do you have to report an accident, really?
There's no statute sort of that gives you a time frame. But what I can tell you is it's better to do it sooner than later because – again, it gives the opportunity for other individuals that you're either accusing of doing something or an insurance company where you're going to be making an injury claim, that if it takes you, you know, months, they're certainly going to wonder why you didn't do something much sooner, because everybody's memories, you know, they lose that and they lose the ability to do an investigation and all of those sorts of things. But there's not a specific time period that you have to do it. I always say, you know, the way I look at it is, what is a juror going to say if it took you 3 months to make a police report of an accident that you're now saying was very significant? So if it wasn't real significant, then maybe a few days, but still a few days is probably the longest you want to wait. Okay. Just because that way it takes that argument off the table.
Right. So do you need to go to a police station? Do you call? Is there an online? Or
yeah,
how
so
do you file?
It all depends on what police agency you're dealing with. Most of them have the old counter report, which meant you would go personally into the police station. A lot of times you can do it that way for some jurisdictions. Some jurisdictions do have the ability to do it online now, so you'll just have to check. And then phone calls will normally be the best route to begin with, just to confirm what is the best way for me to do this so that you get something documented with that police agency. And they'll tell you over the phone. So you don't call the 911 line. Right. You'll call the dispatch, a non-emergency line, and talk to a person there. If you can't get through to a person, then you probably want to go into the local dispatch, whatever, wherever the local police agency is. Like Denver has a number of them around the city. Right. Aurora does too. But if you have some smaller jurisdictions, then go in and talk with them about it. You may be able to fill it out right there. I think it's really helpful if you do have to do it in person that you go in and you handwrite out a statement, because that statement will then be used through the process of what took place. But much like any other time that we have where we talk about recorded statements, you want to make sure that you get it right. And so if there's questions about certain things, the way they happened, and you're not sure, you don't want to put down something that you're going to regret later. So just keep that in mind when you complete those statements.
Would you suggest someone call you before they even call their own insurance company and report it? Or should you go ahead and call your insurance company and let them know?
You want to let the insurance company know right away. Okay. I've had this happen where the people have called me beforehand. And then the insurance company, especially where you've got an accident that someone is then saying, well, did it really happen or didn't it? If you call a lawyer before you call your own insurance company, the insurance company is probably going to find out about that at some point, and they're going to wonder why you did that, and it just makes it look suspicious. Right. And so I would suggest not calling a lawyer until you get a claim filed, until you've done the counter report and you get that resolved. I mean, if you have questions about it, certainly you could give us a call and we can give you some advice, but I don't want you to go in and fill out a fee agreement and then have us make the counter report up, because it does make people wonder.
Sure.
And it's much like the discussions we've had about taking pictures and how that's changed over the years. 25 years ago, it would be weird for a person having a picture of where you fell down. Now it's expected because we all have cameras and everything else. So what jurors are believing should be in evidence is much different today, but I think we're still on the edge. If you call me first before you make a claim with your insurance company to get your story right, because that's what their argument is going to be later, you're better off starting the process there and then giving us a call before you do a recorded statement or before you have a real detailed statement given to anyone. That's where we can help you, but start the claim before you get a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Are you required to report an accident? I mean, if you're not really going to, like, you know, I bump into you and you go, hey, it's cool, which we can get into why you shouldn't do this, but you go, no, it's cool, just I'll get an estimate, you can write me a check or whatever. And then, so is there any law that you have to report an accident?
No, and that's really the point of this conversation, is there isn't. There's no requirement that you do it. There's a requirement that you stay at the scene of an accident. But in these cases where we have accident alert, there's no requirement that you stay there until a police officer get there. And so if someone calls the police and says they're on their way, then you have to stay. But when we're not doing that, you don't have any of those requirements. And if you don't, that's where there's just folks out there. There's a certain percentage of the population, I think, that may be dishonest in that situation. And that's why I'm saying it's important to get different levels of evidence with regard to taking a picture of the driver, taking a picture of the car, finding out if the driver is the owner of the vehicle, getting a picture of the license plate, and also a picture of the vehicle identification number in the windshield.
And that's something you brought up for a long time that I never thought about before, the VIN number, because if the plate's stolen,
you'll never find that person. Yeah, and I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you just want to be vigilant about it, because I want to have a positive outlook with people that you have in accidents. But I've had enough cases that there's a certain percentage of them that people give you the wrong information, and that's why it's so important to have the police available, because they normally won't lie to the police. But when you can't have that happen, then getting these multiple sources of information so that you can figure it out later if a person is being a little dishonest about certain things is going to benefit you.
All right. Again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886, and I hope you'll put that number in your phone. I had an accident a few years ago, and Kevin and I had done a show much similar to this, and boy, once I got hit, you just, like I say, adrenaline starts going, you kind of forget some things. So that's why we go over these shows, to help you out if you are involved in an accident. And Kevin, what about if you think, well, good night, it's my fault, I hit somebody. It may not be, and we've talked about that before.
Yes.
Sometimes we always say, if you rear-end somebody, no questions asked, and that's not true.
It's not. And in fact, those cases come up more often with the sort of traffic that we have and the manner in which people are driving these days, that sometimes there's a jury instruction in Colorado that says that it's presumed that when you run into the back of someone's vehicle, you're presumed to be negligent. But that's not what's called an irrebuttable presumption. And what that means is that although that jury instruction is there, you can present evidence. And I've had cases where road rage situation where the person flies in front of you, gets right in front of your vehicle and slams on their brakes. and you rear-end them, well, that's not your fault. That's the person in front of you that's causing the injury. Same thing with a variety of other sorts of circumstances. Police officers can get it wrong with regard to their investigation. They don't get it wrong very often, but we've had it happen, and we've been able to disprove what the officer was saying by evidence at the scene and witnesses at the scene that will testify contrary to what the police officer believed took place. So if you get into a situation where you're like, hey, I got the ticket, and I was injured, but I don't think I was at fault, then that's where you can call us and we can talk about it. And the great thing about our practice is we not only handle the criminal defense side, but also the personal injury side. So we can handle that traffic ticket, figure it out, get some really good discovery early on, mm-hmm. so that we can help you through that process. You know, sometimes you're right that it wasn't your fault. Sometimes we find that it's not the case.
Right.
I mean, but that's on us. We'll figure that out as we go along. And I think the important thing for people to realize during those situations is, let's have a conversation about it. It's free consultation to begin with.
Sort of say free consultation.
And I've got a case right now where I'm not exactly sure what's happened with the accident. We're trying to figure out. So we're taking care of the criminal stuff for our client. She was hurt. She's getting treatment. And we're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And I don't know yet because it's kind of a complicated case. But those sorts of cases are ones that we're willing to look at and help people with. And you got to start early. Because the problem sometimes with these cases is people make statements that they don't think are bad, and later on, just because of the complexity of the case, that statement ends up hurting them when it probably wouldn't have had to had we talked about it beforehand. So those are the sorts of things that we can help people with.
Right. And we talk about all the time. I mean, if you're injured, boy, seek treatment, you know, immediately and all. And then before you talk to the other insurance company, the other insurance company is going to call you.
Yeah.
You do recommend to call you.
Oh, absolutely.
Before that conversation.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's important relating to the treatment aspect of it, in fact, I met with a client today, was referred by another client that we're having the conversation in my conference room, and the potential client says, you know, we don't want to be those people that are out getting a personal injury lawyer like yourself, and that we're, you know, that it seems like we're chasing the money. And I said, well, but that's not really what we're talking about. And in this particular case, they had a significant accident, and they had some pre-existing conditions, not related to the accident, but pre-existing medical problems that complicate the case. And so their treatment is expensive. And so they're worried about how they're going to work through those issues and get the treatment they need now relating to some headaches and some other things they're doing. And the point is that these potential clients that I meet with, you've got to be willing to get yourself better. And you've got to be willing to take a little bit of the risk relating to that, even when they had health insurance. And I think the insurance lobby has done a really good job of making people feel guilty about getting treatment and then asking to be compensated for their injuries. And I'm trying to figure out a better way to articulate the fact that this is something that an individual who has been in a car accident that wasn't their fault, they have the right and the obligation to get themselves better, because we've talked about it with your case.
Sure.
You know, with a neck or back injury where, you know, years or decades later, you're like, oh, you kind of kick yourself like, I should have done something right away.
Right.
That's why it's important to do this sort of work early on in the process to keep yourself better, because our health, there's never enough money to cover, you know, your health down the road. Mm-hmm. But the point is, in our practice, is what we first want to do is get people better so that they just live a better life
right.
after an accident. And then the money is secondary. But you have to do that work in the front end to get things better. Otherwise, you'll never lose on both fronts.
Right. So the free consultation, you know, someone hears this today and maybe they have an accident today and then they want to call you. What does that free consultation look like? I mean, what are you just kind of interviewing them
yeah.
to see what happened, first yep. of all, I guess, and then just to kind of just figure out if you can be of value.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is that I answer a bunch of questions, because in car accidents these days, it's really complex relating to what insurance is going to cover. So let's say the normal person that comes into my office has health insurance, they have MedPay relating to their car insurance, and then they have their regular underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. So we have the conversation and we establish right away the other party was cited, they are at fault, so we've got the bodily injury coverage for the at-fault party. They're going to cover your injuries at some point. The problem is Colorado is a tort state. And what that means is that you, as the person that's been a victim of this sort of situation, have to go treat, and then you have to make a demand later, because it's not like they pay as you go. This is the best way I can describe it. We're not a grocery store anymore. We're a restaurant. So you go through, you have the meal, you have to pay for it at the end. They're not paying for the ingredients as you need them. And that's really hard, because people financially have a hard time dealing with that. But we talk about how exactly that happens and what you can do to better facilitate the situation. And then we help people through the process. And the only way I can do that is to know about it early on. You come to me a year and a half, 2 years later, well, a lot of the work that should have been done, and if you don't do it, then you've lost it, because then you give the opportunity for the defense or for the insurance company to make lots of arguments about why what you do starting 2 years later is not related to that car accident.
Sure.
So that's why it's important. Free consultation, we talk about it, we go through, and we make sure we see what people are willing to do to help themselves, and then if it's a good fit where we can add value. And if it is, then we go forward with some sort of agreement. It's a contingency. We don't get paid until the person gets money and we recover money for them. If we don't recover any money, we don't get paid.
Right.
And that's the way it goes.
And maybe you're someone out there and you've been talking with an insurance company and you've already got some money on the table. And we talk about this from time to time. So let's say you got $25,000 offered to you. You can call Kevin today, have a meeting with him free of charge. You protect, you say, hey, if you've got $25,000, you get that $25,000.
Right.
But anything over and above, that's where you will do your fee agreement.
Correct.
And man, that's
yep. And if I think I can add, right. Yeah. And if I think I can add value above that $25,000, I'll tell you that, and it's all on me. And if I don't, I'll do a bunch of work for free. And that's the risk that I run.
Right. 303-806-8886. Again, Flesh and Beck Law, fleshlawfirm.com, FLESCHlawfirm.com. Last thing on accidents real quick, and then we come back from the break. We'll talk about some of these warrants. Social media, we've talked about the importance of that. And, you know, somebody says, oh, I'm really hurt. Next thing they're, you know, up hiking at Pike's Peak or
dancing at a wedding, skiing, wedding reception.
Things like that.
Yes.
So you and insurance companies look at social media.
Sure do.
So be careful.
It's a huge deal. In fact, I've got a case right now, a criminal case, that we've been able to limit the amount of evidence that's involved in the case until we have the district attorney had talked to one of their witnesses, and my client was talking with the witness about what took place on the particular day of the offense, and basically implicated herself in the whole thing through social media. And it completely ruined the defense of her case. So it does matter. And they're voluntary statements normally in social media. So if you type it out and it's out in the internet stratosphere, somebody's going to find it. Mm-hmm. And when they do, they're going to use it against you. So yes, absolutely. Whether someone's in a case now or there's something going on in their life that they're concerned about their liberty, don't talk about it on social media, period. And don't put stuff on social media where you think it may be. If you're concerned about someone in your life that will see it and will feel that it's objectionable, well, don't put it out there, because somebody will find it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. We got to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The big question, can rates continue to drop? Have you taken advantage of these low rates, or are you still waiting? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. To get that low rate, to lower your payment, or to take cash out for home improvement, or just pay off debt and save even more, call 720-895-0500. Have you applied for a loan and been treated like just another number? Or is no one listening to what you want? Never get the same person when you call to find out your status? Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where we've been providing personalized service since 2001. We want to know what you want. We listen to you and find the loan that fits you, all with lower fees and low rates. We will save you time and thousands in unnecessary expense and interest. 720-895-0500. Want to pay off your home faster without changing your spending habits? Want to see how much you can save when you use a broker who knows Colorado? We offer low down payment loans, purchase loans to 95% without mortgage insurance, and customized terms. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, and be treated with respect again. NMLS 298-191, regulated by DORA, equal credit lender.
Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest to you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DNDTireservice.com.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley. We appreciate you being with us. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. You'll find a lot of great companies to do business with there, and one of those companies is Flesh and Beck Law. Kevin's also on our senior referral list, referralsforseniors.com, and he'll be glad to help you in any way. And as we talk about criminal law, personal injury, really anything legal, give Kevin a call and just see if he can help you. Again, he doesn't get into bankruptcy, family law, different things like that. But, man, partnerships, Kevin, real quick. I mean, you know, you can do a lot of different things in just some general practice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing that's important about different areas of practice, especially in the metro area, we have enough volume of cases is what we've found that we've really tried to. So I've done a bunch of other types of law. Domestic relations work, bankruptcy. I mean, throughout the 25 years that I've been practicing, I've done those sorts of things. So I can issue spot relating to those. And those are helpful where people aren't sure, mm-hmm. you know, is it a criminal matter? Is it a personal injury matter? Well, I don't know. You know, we can certainly talk about it. Call the office and see if we can help you to begin with. And then if we can't, we normally can refer you to someone who we think is a really good fit for your case. Most people don't really know what the issues are. They know what their problem is. They know how they want to resolve it. And then they've got to figure out what sort of lawyer they need to help them. Because in a large metropolitan area like this, the great thing about it is you generally have enough lawyers that are specializing in a particular area of practice that you've just got to figure out what exactly you need and then get it out there. A lot of times we can help people, but if we can't, we can figure out a way to send them to someone that we know does a really competent job and then figure it out from there.
Right. All right, let's talk about warrants a little bit.
Yeah.
And there are different kinds of warrants, I guess. So kind of give us just some background on warrants. And, you know, we were talking today a little bit before the show. Most people that I've ever known that got picked up on any kind of warrant, you know, they ran a red light, they didn't use a signal to turn or something, then all of a sudden they found out there was some ticket they forgot about.
Right.
Different things like that.
So yeah, so
they usually don't come to your house to arrest you.
Correct.
But it's probably going to be some kind of traffic violation that gets you arrested.
Yep, and what happened, that's exactly right. So first of all, most traffic violations in the state of Colorado, they don't put a warrant out for your arrest if you don't show up for a court date. They're sort of quasi-criminal, quasi-civil sorts of issues. And with a traffic ticket, if you don't show up, they default you. They basically cause a judgment to enter against you. And where you run into trouble is once they enter that warrant or the judgment, mm-hmm. then they also enter a fine, and that fine isn't paid. And so when the fine's not paid, then they let DMV know and they suspend your driver's license. That's a lot of times how people find out about these traffic tickets. Now, where you do get warrants and traffic tickets is if they say that you didn't provide insurance. So you've got to provide proof of insurance when you have contact with a police officer if they ask you for it. And if you don't provide them proof, then they cite you for it, no proof of insurance. And that's a mandatory appearance in court, because what you have to do is you have to go in and either show that you had insurance on that day, or you have a trial or you plead to that, and there's big fines related to that. But it's a mandatory personal appearance. So that's how somebody can get a warrant. And what I mean by a warrant is it's basically an order from a court saying you were supposed to be in my courtroom on X and Y date, you didn't appear, and so I'm putting out a notification to law enforcement that if they run into you, if they come into contact with you and they check your history, they'll see that we have this request to have you come back to see us. And the way that request to come back to see them happens is you're taken into custody, and then either you're bonded out or they bring you to that particular courthouse, and then you're being seen by a judge. The other way that bench warrants happen is, or arrest warrants, is when you have a situation where there's an allegation, let's say, of domestic violence. Domestic violence is probably the majority of the times where people get warrants against them, because that's a no-bond hold in Colorado. So a judge can't set a bond where there's an allegation of domestic violence involved mm-hmm. in the case. And so they automatically have to go out and get you. And it can be just sitting out there for years, and you get a traffic stop, and then the officer has to take you into custody. And then you're held until you get in front of a judge, and that judge sets a bond. The other time that it happens is when you've failed to, so that you first get a summons, because that's a lot of times, maybe, you know, in the county courts and the municipal courts of the state, I bet 70% of the cases are started with a summons. So you're given a piece of paper that says you have to appear on a particular day at a particular time at a particular courthouse. And you have to appear to be given charges, and this is what is happening with your case, but there's a personal appearance. So they don't give you a warrant. They don't give you any sort of requirements for a bond. You're just to do it because they've asked you to do it. And most of the time people show up and they proceed with the case and there's no problems. That's called a summons. Well, when you get a summons and you don't show up on that summons, the court then again can enter what's called an arrest warrant. And that's sometimes a bench warrant. Those are situations where the court is saying, well, we gave you the opportunity to just show up as a normal adult would and on a summons. And because you didn't act like an adult, now we're going to go get you. And they'll put out this notification, a warrant, and then if you have contact with the police, they'll come out and get you. Or if you have some sort of contact with the police. And it can be, I've had cases where, you know, it's a traffic, that's one way, traffic citation. Or another way where you just are a witness to a car accident.
Right.
And they want to know your ID, and they run your ID, and all of a sudden you have a warrant. I've had situations where they're taking the driver of the car into custody because of a criminal offense, and you happen to be a passenger in the car, and they run your identification, and they take you in as well. So those are the sorts of ways that the court makes sure that people show up to court, and it happens in all levels of courts, municipal courts, county courts, district courts throughout the state, federal court, where you run into where people will actually go out and get you is more felony matters. Or where there's some real exigent circumstances where the court or the prosecuting attorney believes there's some danger in you being in the community, mm-hmm. They'll have people go out and search for you. That happens a very small percentage of the time. Normally what they'll do is they'll put a warrant out. I'll give you another example. Civil case this week. I had a case where I got a judgment against someone. They were supposed to answer interrogatories in a civil case. Well, they never responded to me. I served them with it. When they didn't respond, I then sent them a letter saying, you're going to be held in contempt. Respond to my interrogatories, the questions that I've asked you. They still didn't respond. I served them with a show cause from the court to say, why aren't you answering these things? So we had an appearance this week, served them with the notice that they had to appear. They didn't appear. So on a civil case where all they had to do is answer questions,
Now they've complicated the situation.
They have. So in that case where she didn't show up, she got a bench warrant for her arrest, and I've got a $36,000 judgment against the person. The court said, you know what, because they're not responding to me or to you, I'm going to put a warrant out for them. $36,000 cash-only bond. So at some point, this person is going to get picked up. It's going to be probably uncomfortable for them, and they're going to have to sit in jail overnight, most likely, and then be brought in front of this district court judge and explain why they haven't answered. And then they will answer, and then the court will probably release them. But those are the ways that people can get warrants put out for their arrest.
Right. And warrants never expire.
Generally, they last 10 years.
10 years,
yep.
Okay.
But generally what happens is once that time period comes up on those warrants, the court will reissue them. So I've never seen one not. They always are able to renew them and continue those warrants.
Now, let's say you've got a warrant here, and then you're driving through Kansas, get a speeding ticket.
Yep.
Are they going to pick that up in Kansas sometime?
Yeah, so the only time that warrants are good in other jurisdictions is when they're related to felony matters. Mm-hmm. So if you have a felony warrant in the state of Colorado and you get it stopped in Kansas, that Kansas officer will pick you up on that felony warrant out of Colorado. But a misdemeanor warrant is only within the state.
Gotcha. Yep. So just don't get a handle,
don't do it. But
handle stuff before you get a warrant.
Yeah, but I'll tell you that I mean it happens. It happens a lot in the most strange circumstances. Mm-hmm. So most of the time people show up and it's not a big deal. There are folks out there that just have a propensity not to show up to court, and they end up with warrants and they end up in jails.
Now, if they've got a warrant for your arrest, and let's say you get a traffic stop, does that automatically give them permission to search your car?
So it's not supposed to, but if they're impounding your car, they then, as a matter of the impound, need to inventory the car, is what the case law in Colorado says. So once they do that, they take you into custody and they're impounding your car, they get to look through it. And then you get to argue later that it was an impermissible search.
So they're probably not going to ask you if they can search your car.
They will not. Case. They will just do it as part of the impound.
All right. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. We've got one more segment coming up. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio here on KLZ 560.
Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center offers KLZ listeners complete pet care services every day, all at one location. It's so much more than a clinic and so convenient. Their expert staff is always happy to help your pet have the happy and healthy life it deserves. Schedule a medical checkup for your beloved companion, or take the first step toward a better behaved buddy by signing your pup up for obedience training. Did you know that if your sweet kitty needs grooming, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center is one of the few facilities that offers grooming for both dogs and cats. And if you're planning a vacation, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center offers boarding for dogs, cats, and other small pets, so you can take your vacation without worry, knowing that your four-legged family member's home away from home has a fully equipped medical center on site. Learn more about Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center at LoneTreeVet.com or call 303-708-8050.
Stack Optical has been providing the most comprehensive quality eye and vision care for over 50 years. Stack Optical is a family-owned business, and they're proud to be one of the few optical offices that have their own on-site eyeglass production and eyeglass repair studio. Your one-stop shop for all of your vision needs, eye exams, glasses, and contacts. And don't forget about the Stack Sports Pack. Let owner and certified optician Alan Stack customize a pair of specialized glasses that will make your next outing on the golf course or on the gun range better than ever before. Call today for your $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Or check them out at stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Flesh is with us. We are wrapping up the Legal Hour for this week. And once again, Kevin is with us every other week, every other Thursday usually. And we talk about legal issues. Check out his website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. His number for that free consultation, 303-806-8886. So, Kevin, we're talking about warrants, and a lot of times you think about, boy, search and seizure and different things that go along with a warrant, and too many TV court shows we probably all watch, probably nothing like TV in the real world.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing about the Fourth Amendment and the search and seizure is the most questions I get from people is they immediately think once you're arrested, they have to give you a Miranda warning, which is sort of a search because they're going to be asking you questions. And the idea is that you're then, Miranda was a United States Supreme Court case. And that was basically, the idea is that you're given an advisement before you have to answer questions. And what's really called interrogated when you're in custody.
And that's that whole right thing. You have a right to remain silent.
Exactly. Everybody knows
anything
it.
Anything you say can and will be used against you.
The court of law, you have the right to an attorney, all of those sorts of things. Well, people, and they do, we all watch TV and you hear that. It's not as much anymore, though. It seems like in the 70s and the 80s that was more of a thing because I think the case was newer then. But the idea with Miranda is that they have to give you that advisement when they're going to ask you questions. Well, in most cases anymore, the way the police practices are, they've asked you a bunch of questions before they've arrested you. Like in the case of a DUI, they ask you a bunch of questions when you're just outside of your car door or when you're in your car. Those things are determined that you're, most of the time, you're not in custody at that point.
And although it kind of appears to be casual conversation
at
that point.
Yeah, well, that's what the case law says. It's like, it's not like you're free to leave. You've got a police officer with a gun standing next to the door of your car. But that's what the law says, is that it's a casual conversation and that it's voluntary. It's when they put, really, the bright line test anymore is when they put handcuffs on you is when Miranda can be given. But quite frankly, most of the time, they've got all the information they need at that point. They're not going to ask any questions. So guess what? Miranda doesn't apply because they're not going to ask any more questions. So this is sort of the same thing. So the Fourth Amendment talks about when a police officer can search you or search where you're at, your dwelling, your car, those sorts of things, and your phone, right? We just had a case within the last couple of years at the U.S. Supreme Court about whether police officers can look at your phone when they have contact with you. And what it really boils down to is whether or not you have a sense of privacy with regard to the area that they want to have searched. And the idea with that is certainly your dwelling, where you live, is somewhere that's very private, right? No one is, I mean, most people aren't living in a public space, and they have some expectation of privacy relating to that dwelling. So the heightened scrutiny relating to whether or not a police officer can come into your home and then search it is very high, because your privacy rights mm-hmm. and your expectation of privacy is very high. So that's sort of the balance relating to dwellings. What happens if you get outside of your dwelling and maybe you own 40 acres and you have a garage at the end of your 40 acres that you don't live in? Well, that's no longer a dwelling. That's another type of piece of real estate or whatever that isn't a dwelling. So the expectation of privacy there may be lower. And so what the police can do in the way of searching that and what they need for a search warrant is a lower standard. Same thing with your car. If it's in plain view in your car, and let's say you're driving down the road, the police officer pulls you over for reasonable suspicion you were speeding. You were going 70 and a 55, and they pull you over, and they walk up to your car, and you have 3 pounds of marijuana in a brick in the back of your back seat. Well, they don't need a search warrant for that because they can see it, right? So they can immediately say, hey, what's going on with the 3 pounds of marijuana? You can't have possession of that. Maybe an ounce, but not 3 pounds. That's immediately a situation where it's in open view. They can get to that. They don't need a search warrant for that. But if they believe that they've been trailing you and they've seen you do three what they believe to be drug deals, and they believe that you have drugs in your car, but you have it in, let's say, a locked glove compartment or maybe the center console that's lockable, and they can't see it when they pull you over for some traffic ticket, because that's normally how they pull people over in those situations, then that particular situation, they'd have to get a warrant. And they would have to say, listen, to a judge, they'd have to put together an affidavit. They would have to agree under oath that everything that they say in the affidavit is true. And they would say, listen, we saw this guy, you know, get $100 and give the other person a baggie with something in it that was probably drugs. And it's training and experience. We know that that's how drug transactions happen. It happened 3 times, and he's never gone anywhere else, and it seems that he has drugs in the car, and we want to search the car, but the person hasn't given us permission to do it. So they get a judge to sign off on that. Boom, they're able to look in the car. And that's the way a search warrant is supposed to go. Same thing with a purse or a backpack, anything. Again, you still have levels of privacy relating to those things, but it's whether or not they can see anything with regard to what's in it. Now, the issue that police get around sometimes with regard to these things, the car and backpacks and things like that, is you have a warrant, just like we were talking about in the last segment. You have a warrant for your arrest. They're taking you into custody no matter what because they've had contact with you. It was proper contact. They're just not fishing, because sometimes police officers are pretty good at that. They'll just randomly, they just think someone is doing something illegal, so they'll pull them over. They can't just do that without some sort of reasonable suspicion. But in my example, they've got the reasonable suspicion. They're taking you into custody. You have a backpack. Well, they get to look at it because they have to inventory all that stuff when they take it in, so that when you get out, you get that stuff back, as long as there's nothing illegal in there, right? Same thing with the car. When they take you into custody, they're going to impound that car, and they're going to take it to an impound lot. Well, they've got to inventory it so that you can't say, I had $1 million in cash in the back seat before I left you with the car, and now it's gone. And the argument is that the police are able to do that so that they don't have any issues later. And when they do that and they find things, then the issue is, was it related to a criminal enterprise that you were trying to find out, or was it really legitimately relating to an inventory? And defense lawyers like myself get to argue about that and whether it's constitutionally permissible. All but right. That's sort of the rationale relating to search warrants and how the courts look at what they're doing to protect people.
So will a cop call, like, right there from his car to a judge or to his supervisor or whatever, to try to get that warrant delivered out to that traffic stop?
Yeah, so they actually have to complete paperwork and have the judge sign off on that paperwork. So they'll call, or they'll sometimes you'll see them because they all have computers in their in their cars now. They'll actually be able to type things up, send it, get it to the judge to sign. There's always a judge that's on call for these different jurisdictions that will review them and make decisions about it. So absolutely they could do that right there.
Right. Now, a couple minutes left here. When we say what constitutes a valid search warrant,
good faith.
Good faith.
Yep. On the part of the law enforcement that they believe that there's criminal activity that's going on and that search warrant is necessary to look into that. They still have, and once they get the search warrant, they have to take the search warrant and do the search within a reasonable time because sometimes those search warrants can go stale. So that's, you know, it has to be good faith, it has to be true, and it has to be taken care of fairly quickly.
And one thing, one of you said the warrant must be issued by a neutral and detached magistrate.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means that a judge within that jurisdiction has to get the affidavit or the evidence, and they have to scrutinize it and make sure that they're not related in any way to the person that's getting the search warrant put on them, and then that it seems that everything in the search warrant is accurate and it's viable, that it's accurate, and that it makes sense to do it, balancing the constitutional rights of the accused.
And, you know, we're going to touch on this because next couple of shows I want to hit on this red flag bill.
Yes.
This is what's going to happen on this gun thing. Somebody's going to call in, feel like somebody's a danger.
Yep.
They're going to get a judge to write a warrant. If that judge okays it, they're going to come to your house.
Yes. And then what happens?
And then what happens?
Yep. And you're going to have all your guns confiscated, and then you've got to try to argue to get them back, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't see a judge... I mean, let's face it, human nature. If you've got a police officer at someone's door saying they're mentally handicapped and they're a danger to themselves, I don't know a judge in the world that's going to say, oh, I'm not sure about that, unless they have some personal relationship with the person that you're making the allegation against, and then they're going to recuse themselves because they have a personal relationship with them.
So real quick, if they know you're in the house,
yes,
you look out, they see you look out the window and the cops, and you just don't go to the door
right
with a warrant, can they just... blow the door down if they want.
So there's two different types of warrants here, right? So the one is a warrant for your arrest. If they see you open up the window and they think you're inside, they can come in and get you, especially if it's a felony warrant. If it's not a felony warrant, then they may not do that because the scrutiny relating to the force they use to get to you may be overzealous. If we're talking about a search warrant, again, they need to have somebody there so that they can serve the person with the search warrant. But if there's what they call exigent circumstances, where they're concerned about either losing evidence or that there's something else going on with regard to, this is where the red flag law is going to be interesting, is to how the sheriffs deal with it. Because if they see you open a blind and you're not willing to come to the door, my guess is, depending upon the temperament of the sheriff, they're coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to think, well, maybe something's going on. We don't want to have any problems, and we don't want to have anyone else hurt. So we've got to protect society, and they're going to come in and take whatever they need to, and deal with it later. And that's the real problem with the constitutionality of the law.
Once again, if you've got any legal needs whatsoever, give Kevin's office a call. Always a free consultation, no matter what area of law we discuss. Always that free consultation, 303-806-8886. Kevin, always great information.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today for Haystack Help Radio. Once again, check out our website, haystackhelp.com. Our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Be safe. Don't go anywhere. Mark Griffith coming up next.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.